Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here again on another episode this month as we kind of dive into our community, our FSHD community, as we have another great guest in the wings waiting as we share a little bit about their information. But first, where can you find all those past episodes? Pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts or even on YouTube, search FSHD Society on YouTube or through Spotify, FSHD Radio, or other places that you find your podcast. I use Spotify and I know all those episodes are there. You can go in the Wayback Machine and listen to some of our early episodes as well as others. Maybe those big events that we do are also recorded on there, like the Walk and Rolls of past years and the Giving Tuesday. Our radiothons are there as well if you want to dive back in and kind of listen to some of those episodes, especially if you're a new listener, which welcome to the show because, well, there's a lot of information you might have missed, but feel free to go back. It's all archived there for you. Also, check out all the calendar things going on at fshdsociety.org. Reach out to a local chapter. Get involved. It's usually the best way to kind of attack this disease on the emotional, mental side of things. Kind of sometimes get more involved if you can and be a part of a local chapter. I really encourage all to do that as possible as we've grown chapters throughout the country and even north of us in Canada. And maybe even stretching throughout the world at this point. Today's guest, I'll let her introduce herself mostly, but she is someone that actually is from my neck of the woods, I believe. I'm broadcasting through the area of Wisconsin, kind of the Milwaukee area. I believe, Jane, you're from Madison originally, so we welcome you today to the show. Thanks for taking some time.
Thanks, Tim. I'm glad to be here. And yes, you're right. I'm a Wisconsin native and spent the last 12 years or so living in Madison, Wisconsin. Mm. And I just recently moved to Tampa, and there's a story with that. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We definitely want to cover that. And even that, like the tackling, how do you root yourself up and then replant somewhere else? And exactly. Then, of course, with the mess of what FSHD offers and that, too, and those challenges for sure. But share a little bit of, because I know, you know, listeners, they usually want to know, you know, are we talking from a science standpoint? Is this, you know, a guest from our community? Does this person have FSHD? So you have FSHD, correct?
Right.
And yeah. And, we'd love to have you kind of share a little bit about yourself and kind of your FSHD story maybe to start.
Sure. I'd be happy to. So I was, well, let me start out by, I'll share my age. I'm now 70 years old, and I was diagnosed at 26.
Okay.
And in fact, I was diagnosed the week before my wedding, which was really not a great time to hear that kind of news, right? So I had been going along my merry way and was in a successful career and very, very active and downhill skied and did all kinds of fun things and loved to dance and golf and all that. And then lo and behold, my symptom was I one day could not pick up a full glass of water. Mm. And I stared at my hand and I stared at the glass of water. And no matter what I did with my brain, my hand would not lift the glass of water. And when I ran in for a physical, it was just, the week before my wedding, I told them the story. And later by that afternoon, I was diagnosed with FSHD, muscular dystrophy. Now, I should explain, I have an older brother who also has FSHD. He's 8 years older than I am. But back then, you know, this is a long time ago, there was not a lot known about the disease. There was not a lot of understanding about how you got it, who got it, why you got it. And so it was a surprise to me. It shouldn't have been because there were some early symptoms, but I just didn't notice them until I was diagnosed.
So when you got that diagnosis then from the physician, you mentioned you're right before you're getting married. This is usually, it can be stressful, but kind of a fun stressor because, you know, you're counting down, getting ready for the big day. And then this throws a monkey wrench into your thought process.
Oh my gosh. Well, it was just devastating. You know, we had planned to have our own vows and we were going to be doing all these things at the wedding. And then when I got that news, I said, you know, I'll be lucky if I can get through this without breaking down. And so we changed the service. We simplified everything. And we had this grand honeymoon in Hawaii for 2 weeks. And I have to tell you, it's probably the most depressing 2 weeks I ever spent in Hawaii. I mean, it was really, I will not deny that it was really, really tough to come to grips with accepting this. And it took a long time. You know, honestly, for the first couple of years of the diagnosis, I could not even say the words muscular dystrophy out loud, you know, because it was just such a turning everything upside down.
But it started, right? I mean, with that one moment where you couldn't pick up the glass of water, it was like one of those main things. But at the same time, I mean, a lot of people tell me like nothing drastically changed though, right, Tim? I mean, you know, it's not like you walked into the office and then you walked out, you know, worse physically or something like that, or caught up to you. And it's not, but you're right. It's like this sense of like knowledge that you didn't have before, that this is a matter of fact. This is going to happen.
Well, you know, it's all self-perception, right? So prior to that, I had, you know, I was confident. I had had a lot of wonderful leadership experiences. I graduated top of my class. And, you know, I thought, heck, if I wanted to be, it was back in the day where I thought if I wanted to be a female astronaut, I could do anything I wanted to do that I set my mind to. And the only thing that changed that day was my information about myself. So my self-perception is what changed. Nothing around me changed. How I functioned didn't change, but my self-perception dramatically changed. And suddenly I had to recreate a whole different life view, if you will. That was a huge deal. And again, I want to back up to say, it, you know, there were little symbols that should have given me clues that I had an issue, but I was blind to them. Mm. And it wasn't until I was diagnosed that, okay, reality hit in and I had to totally change my whole view of what I was going to do with my life. However, after getting through that first acceptance of the diagnosis, and that was hard, I will not ever deny that was really, really hard. What I did learn, I learned to begin to grieve more quickly. And what muscular dystrophy taught me is how to grieve quickly, because you do have losses, and you have to realize that just because you have those losses, it doesn't mean you can't still embrace life and thrive. But it took me a while to get to that point. And as I had more losses, I got better and better at understanding that, yes, this is a loss. Yes, I need to grieve it. And yes, I still can thrive. I can still have a good, full, satisfying, happy life.
You use that keyword grieve. I know when I was diagnosed, and one of the first people I talked to about it was my boss actually at the time. And she had MS. So I shared this with her, knowing full well it was a safe place to share that. And that was like one of the first things she said to me, like, you're going to grieve this a little bit. And I was like, that was a thought I never thought, or a feeling I was going to have. What do you mean I'm going to grieve? You know? And to have her explain like the person you thought you're going to be, or you know, this like inevitable change. And granted, she didn't know a lot about the disease specifically, but she knew, you know, muscle wasting, what muscular dystrophy was in general. And I think that it was good to hear that. And now hearing you say it too. So it is like a natural progression. And then you quickly then said grieve quickly. It taught you how to do that. So does that mean like get over it? I mean, is that?
No, you know what I meant, Tim, is first of all, learning not to deny it. I mean, that's number one. Getting through it quickly is first, you know, recognizing that you're grieving. And I think it's not uncommon to want to stuff your feelings, to deny them, to deny that you have this, deny it all, deny it. And so when I say grieve quickly, that was the huge step to shortening the pain process. You know that old saying, what we resist persists. And the longer we deny something, the longer it hangs on and makes us feel terrible and brings pain. But when you acknowledge, when you begin to recognize, oh, I'm feeling sad because I'm losing this ability. And when you just are willing to be honest with yourself, I mean, that my mantra became through all of this, live in truth and have the courage to do the right thing. And once I was able to like live in truth, to accept reality of what is, then I could feel the pain. You don't try to stuff it. You don't try to pretend it's not there. You acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. And then the quicker you acknowledge it, the more fully you acknowledge it, the quicker you can move on from it to acceptance. And I mean, I found that throughout my life. Mm. You know, I had a really full career. I feel very fortunate in my life because I spent over 30 years working in various management positions in manufacturing industry, and I traveled all over the country, and in fact, on a worldwide basis. So, you know, my standing joke was, I was running through airports, and then I was walking through airports, and then I was tripping through airports.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
but. And that's what, you know, in terms of going through the progression of the disease. And then, and what I found, you know, sometimes like, okay, at first I resisted. My first thing was getting leg braces, and that helped with the toe drop, and that helped me be able to walk safely, et cetera. Then I had to go to using a cane. And at first I resisted using a cane, right? Mm-hmm. Once I accepted it, oh boy, it made it a lot easier and I felt safer. Next step was I had to go to a walker. Mm. Well, at first I resist using a walker. I don't want to be in a walker. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to deal with it. But once I accepted it, oh my God, I felt so much safer using a walker. And the same thing happened with a scooter. Mm. It got so that I was getting uncomfortable going places, doing things with friends, because I felt unsteady. I felt if somebody would bump me, I'd fall over, or I could easily trip, and I would get tired. And then once I started using a scooter, it was like, oh my God, this, instead of feeling bad about being in a scooter, it dramatically improved my mobility. Mm. I was like, oh my God, once I accepted this and started using the tool, then I would tell my girlfriends, well, okay, now I can shop until you drop.
Right. You can kind of keep up. It almost opens the door instead of closing.
Exactly. And that was one of the great learning experiences I had from the diagnosis, is to, first of all, you know, understand it, learn what it is, learn what it's doing to you, but then also seek out and learn all the tools that are available to help make mobility possible, or to extend your mobility, or to allow you to continue to thrive. And every time I embraced some new technology, it made my life better, and it allowed me to go back to doing a lot of the things I really appreciate and enjoy doing.
You said you were in manufacturing and a long career, successful career, 30 years in that. Then does that mean then you made kind of a shift? Because I know you've done a lot of things in the Madison area, and I'm sure you're going to continue that work possibly where you are now.
Right. When it got to the point where I was tripping through airports and schlepping stuff was just not realistic anymore, I said I needed to make a change and find a job where I could use my skills but not have to be traveling, where I could stay. And this is when I took a job in Madison as an executive director of a nonprofit agency in Madison. So that was my last major career move before retiring, was running a nonprofit agency. And that was I really appreciated that experience. And then after that, I got involved and was, you know, pleased and to jump into some advocacy roles. So I was able to serve as commissioner for the Disability Rights Commission for the city of Madison, and then got involved in universal design. And the reason I got involved in it is because I needed to create a space for myself where I could function. I still wanted to be independent. I wanted to be able to live alone or to live safely. And so I had my condo totally redone. And using universal design principles, I connected with a company called TZ of Madison, which was a remodeling group, a builder who was very well versed in universal design. And together we created this wonderful livable space. And then I started a website called Designs to Thrive to be able to show people what can be done to create environments that, again, allow a person, whether you're young, you're old, you're in a wheelchair, you're not, it doesn't matter where you are in your stage in life. I wanted to create information that help people understand all ages and all stages of life. You can create an environment where you can thrive.
Yeah, the site designtothrive.com. Is that still active work that you're doing now since you've moved?
It is still active. I mean, I still have the website up. I'm not doing consulting work for pay anymore. I'm really more in a role where I'm, as I said, a volunteer advocate. And I should explain that, yes, I just moved this past month to Tampa, Florida. You know, back to the accepting what is in your life and realizing when it's time to take a new path or do something differently. Yeah. I realized that, okay, I need to think about getting into independent / assisted living because I do live alone. My husband had passed away. I was, independent in my own condo, but I realized, there's going to come a time where I'm going to need help. I still dress myself, shower myself, do all of that, but that's not going to be the forever story. So
yeah.
I did research on independent living places that had assisted living. And I thought, well, heck, if I have to move, I think it's time to move to someplace where there isn't snow.
Oh,
I love Wisconsin.
Come on.
I love Wisconsin, but I don't love ice and snow from a wheelchair.
I couldn't agree with you more. I could not agree with you more. I mean, yeah. That would be definitely one of my goals too. And I think, like you say, you have to have a little bit of foresight to go, I can't, like, if I can avoid these struggles, maybe I should start planning to do that. And snow, the slipperiness in general, it's already let alone somebody that's there in a scooter, walkers and whatnots, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Curb cuts, and they can do a great job with the street and the sidewalk, but it's those curb cuts where all that slush and ice accumulates. It's like, oh, it is nasty. So I knew I needed to make a change. And then I thought, okay, whether I'm packing up to move across town or move across country, it's really a similar kind of experience of uprooting, except the big part is having to make all new friends. That's certainly, I don't want to minimize that. But yet, my husband and I had come to Florida on a regular basis in winter to escape the snow and cold for a month. We were the classic snowbirds.
Sure.
And so I was a little bit familiar with the west side of the state, and I ended up landing in Tampa, and we usually stayed along the Gulf, not that far south of Tampa. So that's where I started exploring, and I landed at a place called Allegro in Hyde Park, which is a south side of Tampa. So here I am, and I just experienced my first hurricane and survived.
We're recording this. It's only been, about a week? Not even.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Since that hurricane came through.
Yes. Idalia came through, and fortunately went quite a ways north of us. It was projected to come right through Tampa, so I was very impressed. This building that I'm in is only like 13 years old, and it's very well equipped for hurricane. The management team was fabulous. They had all the the water, the food, the generators, everything. And we fortunately, you know, here's the other thing I learned. 20 feet above sea level is a good thing. So we're located 20 feet above sea level, and that's enough that we were, you know, safe from storm surge, flooding, and that sort of thing.
Nice. Yeah. So you do mention, yeah, a lot of hurdles, you know, making friends, a new environment, heck, even like, you know, where do you go grocery shopping and those kinds of things. And that can be anxiety driven to tell somebody, you know what, forget it. I'm just going to stay where I am. I'll just cope with what I have here. But
yes,
at the same time, you do have to really worry about your safety and your mobility and all the things that you've mentioned, you know, have so far to do with change. If it's been with the equipment you've needed, coming to grips with the fact that, okay, now I'm going to need this scooter, which to me, it's like, I am that person where, okay, I can still walk, I can still go up my stairs, granted slower than before. I'm trying to avoid the scooter like the plague, to the point of where I work at a nonprofit is my day job as well. And we give medical equipment away to people that need it. And some of our fleet of equipment is like power wheelchairs and scooters. And sometimes we have to move those items. And my boss will say, hey, can you move those like three over there? I'm like, really? Do I have to? She's like, why? I go, man, I feel like if I get in one of those, it's like foreshadowing. I don't want to do it. I do it. And they are fun to drive. I'm not going to lie. You know, the little scooters and stuff, he's zipping around. But it's like, I think I am sharing the feeling of others that might be listening or watching, thinking there's like this sense of like dread or doom with that kind of, abrupt change, especially in regards to equipment. Admitting that you're that far down the line now with this disease that has taken away something else. So how do you convert that into a positive like you have and go, yeah, but now it's opened the door?
Well, you just said it, Tim. You know, the biggest hurdle is getting to the place where you accept that you need it. I mean, you are so right. That is the biggest hurdle. Yeah. And what I learned is that every time I was willing to accept, and I think it takes a lot of positive self-talk, a lot of discipline. I mean, it really does take changing your self-perception. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that to me was the biggest hurdle. And then once I accepted every step where I accepted a new piece of equipment, like now I'm in a power wheelchair. And I have to tell you, and I think it's worth it to pay what you need to get the one that goes up and down, because mine goes up and down. Yeah. Oh my goodness. That has made all the difference, because it's such a different perception when I can raise myself up by a foot and I can talk with a person who's standing and I can look them in the eye as I talk with them.
Yeah.
That makes such a difference in not only your self-perception, but also in the comfort level with the person that you're talking with. And it's getting the right equipment, right, that you feel comfortable with. And I'm not going to lie that it isn't a challenge to let go of your own stereotypes and stigmas about people in wheelchairs, right? I mean, it's like, I know I went through that. I don't want to be one of those people in a wheelchair. And you think about all the biases and discrimination, everything else that you personally feel and perceive. And so having to overcome that is, again, it requires a lot of positive self-talk. And all I can say is that once you get over that hurdle, accepting the new piece of equipment makes life so much easier. I mean, that's the gift. That is the gift after acceptance is, oh my gosh, with this wheelchair, I can do so many things that I couldn't do before. Because I have a hard time raising my arms up, right? And lifting and reaching. Well, now the chair does it for me. I just lift the chair up and suddenly I can do things. I can reach things. I can take care of things that I couldn't before. So it's like, this is a great tool.
Yeah, a breath. Yeah. Takes away that anxiety. Yes. Yeah. And I think you're right. It's kind of getting through that stigma part. And And sometimes the reality of it is just that. It's just the reality is going to take to the point where there's no denying it. This is going to help. Sometimes it's even loved ones to kind of enforce that. Like, this is just going to help everybody involved.
Yes.
To be more independent. Yes. And those that are maybe a caregiver, you're relying on them a little bit less, which is okay.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what, Tim, you just hit something really important. If you're willing to accept and embrace the tool, you make the life of everyone around you better, not just you. And that's what I learned, is that I made it easier for all my friends, because suddenly I could do things by myself. I didn't have to rely on someone else for help to do some of those things. And it just really enhanced my life. And that's what I would say, is that the enhancement to your life of accepting the tool or the wheelchair, the scooter, whatever it is, outweighs by far that negative perception. And you begin to realize, oh, I'm the same person I was 2 days ago before I used this.
Yeah.
Now I'm using it. I'm still the same person. And guess what? I can get around a lot better. I can function better. I have more mobility now, and I'm still me. And I think that it takes a lot of positive self-talk to kind of to get to that point too, of self-acceptance.
Yeah.
I think that's, because that's the other thing, the fear of, you know, I'm fearful that, oh, my friends are going to look more negatively toward me, or my boss is going to look more negatively. And I found, no, that wasn't true. That didn't happen. I was my biggest hurdle.
Yeah, that's something I think that I'm seeing too and listening to. And I know down the line I'll be guilty of it as well. I know me, that this will be something I'll have to get over too. But then to find the confidence in it. And if you have that confidence and it comes off that way, usually the people around you that are confident to be near you with the machine, they're like, oh, well, this person is, you know, confident. And, and I think that gives that back to you. You talk too about universal design, the importance of that. Explain though, if someone's going, what do you mean universal design? We're talking about within our living space, right?
When Correct.
That term.
Correct. There are all sorts of little things that you can do in your living environment to make it easier to function in, to make it safer. Something as simple as making sure that all the floors in your apartment or home or condo are the same, so you don't have transition strips. I mean, I had something as basic as that. I used to use, when I was using a walker, the transition strip between the kitchen floor and the dining room floor created a bump. And every time I went over it with my walker, I'd spill my coffee cup.
Yeah.
Or if I set it on the walker, sometimes it'd bounce off the walker and I'd have glass to clean up and spilled coffee.
Whole other problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Something as simple as that. Treating doors and in your kitchen and cupboards for drawers. Drawers are way more accessible for everyone, not just for you and me, but for a senior, for a little kid, you can pull a fully extended drawer out and you can reach something in the very back corner of the drawer. You're not bending down on your knees. You're not trying to see into a cupboard that you can't see into. You know, it's just so much easier. So that's another example. Bringing electrical outlets to the front of the cabinet instead of the back wall. Then, a six-year-old can plug in his or her device as easily as I can plug in my whatever it is that I need to plug in. So those are examples of universal design, simplifying your life by creating smart, functional design elements in your living environment that make it easier for everyone.
So why do things have to be converted? Why didn't people as designers, builders, et cetera, make things this way to begin with?
And that's, you hit on something that I'm trying to advocate for. And I hope to get involved in advocating for it down here in Florida, because it's a big need and an unmet need. And it's, I think it's resistance to change, like everything, there are all these developers and contractors and all sorts of people who are building all these apartments and condos and homes, and you get the same plans done the same way. And you know, until or unless people consciously or are made conscious of the options and the opportunities for new and better design, they just keep doing it the same old way. And they don't think about, gee, what are better ways of doing this? So, you know, the whole idea and understanding of universal design is fairly new for a lot of people. And it takes some educating to expose yourself to those ideas.
Yeah, and it comes with like walking that walk, so to speak, lack of a better term, or rolling that roll, right? To know that when you're at a wheelchair height, that's not accessible to a lot of things. Now you're in a sitting position and everything you're doing, and you mentioned it's great when a power piece of equipment can raise you up for sure. Not everybody has that capability.
Right.
I even listened to my in-laws who, you know, my father-in-law has to be transferred with a transport chair quite often, which is like basically like a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And my mother-in-law would say, you know how impossible it is on certain things and this to access? I'm like, yes. Or how much you have to pre-plan your trip to wherever you're going in your mind to go, wait, is that accessible? Can I get in there? How difficult is it going to be? Because it, you know, we're not going to totally rely on other people or strangers for that matter to hold the door open or do those things. It does happen, I think, quite often, but we want to be able to know like the path is as clear as possible from our home to where we have to go and then back. And when things are not are a struggle or just, you know, massive barriers, it becomes very frustrating. So to me, then the question is, if we haven't designed things like this to begin with, and we want places, buildings, public access to convert, is there resistance that you've met within, you know, changing people's thoughts on that? You know, if it's business owners or government buildings or what?
Right. It's a slow process. I mean, I was made a commissioner of the Disability Rights Commission in Madison back in 2016. And here it is 2023. And it's just been within the last couple of years that there have been a number of inroads made to accessibility. And one of the groups that I work with, Madison Development Corporation, just built a 44-unit affordable housing apartment building, and the whole first floor was universal design. So that's a big win. And I think the mayor has included it in funding available to expect or require some universal design. Until you can get the powers that be or the sources of money requiring it, that's one way. And then also we've been trying to get in front of developers and architects and do an education process. And again, Madison has a task team called Beyond Compliance that's part of Downtown Madison, Inc. And they've been very assertive and creative in trying to do training sessions and get in front of all sorts of different audiences to educate. So it doesn't happen overnight. It's a process of education and it takes time. And again, you've got to be able to convince developers, other people that are spending the money, right, to do the construction, to see the value in doing this and that there's a market for it. So it goes both ways. You also need consumers like you and me asking for that. So it's a combination of educating us to ask the questions, and then also educating the developers and the builders to the possibility that this opens up for them for a whole new market.
So when you moved, what were the things that you found were the biggest struggle in your situation from go from Wisconsin to Florida?
Well, honestly, I did a lot of research online and looked at about 24 different independent or senior living facilities. You know what the biggest issue was? I couldn't find places that had a bathroom big enough for a power wheelchair to turn around. That's a perfect example of universal design. Yeah. You know, you don't have to make the entire apartment bigger, but you do need to make the bathroom big enough for a wheelchair to function in. It's so simple, but it's amazing. The lack of space most apartments had, especially older buildings.
Oh, yeah. I think the older the building, the worse it is, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was impossible. So many places got crossed off the list just because the bathroom was inaccessible. So, I mean, those were the kinds of things. Is first of all, finding properties that where the space that I would be functioning in was actually accessible. You know, so it goes beyond just wider doors and more open space. The bathroom is really one of the biggest issues.
So you're not at all then going to miss your first winter away from Wisconsin. You're not going to, I'm not going to hear a rap on my door at my house asking for some time in the snow.
Probably not. Well, I miss dear friends. I miss all those wonderful Wisconsinites.
Yeah.
You know, a great state full of great people, but I won't miss the ice and snow.
So then as you make roots into the area you're in now, you obviously found a place to live, accommodates well for you. You did your research. You got there safe and sound. Lived through your first hurricane. These are huge things that you've accomplished already in such a short amount of time. But as you kind of get your roots deeper into the community, what are your hopes? Like, what are you looking to do?
Well, tomorrow I am going to a meeting with OLLI, which stands for Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. I'm getting engaged in that. And the mayor of the city of Tampa is going to be the speaker there. I hope to introduce myself to her. Her name is Jane Castor. And I'm going to start asking questions about what is Tampa doing to create a more livable city. And I will start digging into information. I will promise you I will get engaged wherever I can. I will volunteer to be involved. I've already met a woman who's certified in universal design down here in the remodeling industry, and I plan to connect with her. So I am going to do everything I can, as long as I can, to help advocate for education and application of universal design here in Tampa.
So you're gonna stir things up just a little bit. I mean, there's nothing wrong.
I hope so.
Oh man, because I know that there are some chapters in the Florida area of FSHD Society. You know, very active people there in the state of Florida, and I haven't heard that get tackled yet. You know, specifically. With the people that I know there. I think there's even actually an FSHD Society board member that lives in the Florida area too. But I think as you, and I'm sure they have talked to the mayor too, you might find, I think that as you introduce yourself, she might be like, I know people in the FSHD community. You know, I think there might be that bridge.
Well, Tim, I'm looking forward to talking with you off air to get some names because I want to get connected to the FSHD Society down here as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because in Wisconsin, it was definitely thin. I tried myself to build a community there. Oh, my goodness. Very, very difficult. I think partly is because it's so vast here.
Right.
You don't realize that there's a little center area of Madison, a little cluster, a large cluster of people in the Milwaukee area. But outside of that, there's a lot of distance in between.
Right.
From Madison to Milwaukee is almost, you know, what, 45 minutes or so, depends on where you are in each city. From each other, and that's about it. And then it gets pretty vast. So yeah, I will definitely give you the names and let you know of all that for sure. So let's say then, if it's, this is maybe like a two part, you know, question. First part is, you know, if someone's thinking about doing what you did, moving from one area to another, it could be across country. It could be, you know, maybe just out of state, not as far. Regardless, you know, what are some of those like main things they should be looking for first? You already talked to maybe a little bit about it. Part of the answer would be, you know, research, making sure that the place you're going to go to has those accommodations you need. Is there anything else that they should be, you know, keeping on their list?
Well, obviously a big deal is figuring out what you can afford.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. And so once you know that, that limits or points you in the direction of what are your options. And then once you start looking at the options, you're right. And in my case, you know, I looked at everything from accessibility and function and meals and services and access to help. You know, one of the big things for me was I wanted to be in a facility that did not just independent living, but also when you needed assisted living, they come to you instead of you having to move to a new facility.
Oh, gotcha.
And that would be something I'd say pay a lot of attention to. There are a lot of places that say, oh, yes, we're both independent and assisted. But once they deem that you need assistance, they move you to another facility, maybe a much smaller room or apartment or whatever. in this case, it was real important to me that once I settle in, I get my furniture and my art in place. I don't want to move again.
You're set there.
I'm set. I want to bring the help to me. So that was important to me. And then I wanted meals. I love to cook, but now it's a lot of work and the pots and pans are too heavy. I wanted a place with three meals a day. Maybe that's not important to you, but you know, it's something to think about for the future. And that's the other thing to think about. Okay, not just what are my needs today, but what do I anticipate they might be in 2 years or 4 years? And where can I settle where I have the least disruption over time, where I can continue to get additional help as I need it, where I can thrive to the best of my ability for as long as I can. But when I do need the help, it's there and it's not difficult to get it.
And then the second part of that is, and I've asked this, you know, to a lot of the guests that come in, especially those that have FSHD, you know, you shared your diagnosis story. Some it comes across as they get like kind of the doom and gloom, no treatment, no cure. Hence, I think it kind of puts us in that deeper grieving process than we would want and so forth. But I always think that, you know, there's a very good chance that somebody found this show or found this episode, FSHD Society, whatnot, within, you know, the first couple of days or a week that they get a diagnosis and they're searching. They're like, how do I deal with this? How are others dealing with this? Are there others? Am I alone? And all that. So with that in mind, last question I have for you is, you know, what advice do you give those people that, you know, newly diagnosed? What's like your take, your direction, your advice for them?
Well, I think that, well, first of all, you need to grieve. You need to accept it. You need to understand that you will go through the pain of grieving. And to also know that, know the hope of being able to still live your life as fully as possible and be able to embrace your values as fully as possible, that you still are you. You are not a different human being. You are simply a person who has a diagnosis, you know, and that you can live your life. You can. Yes, you may have to compromise on some of the physical things you might have done, but you don't have to compromise on who you are as a valued human being. And to understand that, and I think to learn self-love, first of all, you know, and to learn that you can still find joy in every day and to make that part of your mission, right? That there is joy to be had if I'm willing to see it and embrace it.
That's awesome. That's well said. Well said. I'll definitely have to shoot you all the info I got on the Florida chapters from here for sure. And I know that they would love to connect with you, especially with everything you've done here in the Madison area. Wisconsin's going to miss you. You know, so many flee to where it's warm. I get it. Maybe someday that'll be me. I don't know. You know, life has interesting ways of showing you your path, maybe when you least expect it. But I'm glad that our paths crossed for this episode and long time coming, you know, right when I realized someone from Wisconsin, you're gone. It's like, wait a minute, you know. So I'm glad, though, that we connected in this episode. And thanks for your time today and sharing all your knowledge with us and your positivity for sure.
Oh, thank you, Tim. It was my pleasure. Take care.
Absolutely. You take care as well. So that is our featured guest for this episode, who has done a great job in teaching us all, I think, what adaption is. You know, how do you change your life even when maybe you're not ready for it? And I think that to me is like part of where I wrap my head around FSHD as it attacks us, not just in our bodies, but then of course it has that mental struggle. Is it something else is taking control when you want it and now you don't have it? Or maybe not as much as you thought you did. And it's always possible that a disease is going to come across our human life that we're going to have to tackle. It's a very good chance of that. And what it could be and what does it mean, we don't know. And I think tackling it full on, as Jane mentioned, is definitely the way. So Jane Nemke has been actually on the FSHD Society in the past, and she has talked about, if you just Google her name, it's N. as a Nancy, E-M-K-E, you will see that she has a great video on YouTube about the Universal Design. You'll also find that she had an article linked to that video at the FSHDSociety.org back in June of 2022. So just over a year ago. And it is great in the fact that it shows us universal design. What does it mean? What does it mean for our population, our community, as your disease progresses to whatever that is, because it's so different for all of us. But at the same time, what I love about Jane's passion, energy, confidence, those things really come through in the video there, as well as I think this conversation. Two main takeaways too that I say from this episode for me was she used the word self, you know, self-talk many times. And at the end they're like self-love. Love the fact that you are in the situation. I've even heard past guests tell me, you know, they are almost slightly grateful for FSHD to some degree because of what it's opened doors or met people or those kinds of things. Because if they didn't have the disease, that wouldn't happen. I've spoken that way in the past. Not that I want this disease, but if there's any positive to it, that's it. This was another one meeting this guest. And then the self-talk. There's a positive thinker, as I call him. A lot of people know him. His name is John Gordon. And he's not a Pollyanna positive type speaker, has a ton of books out. I've read so many of them. I use his style in my coaching style and reminding myself that there is many things that we can do to add positivity in our lives. And he's a great resource for that. And one of the things he talks about is like, you know, talk to yourself, you know, don't listen to yourself. Like talk to yourself, like build yourself up. You can do this. Da 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 da. Talk to yourself. Encourage yourself. Listen to yourself means like that doubt. So self-talk, I translate that from what she was saying was, you know, talk to yourself. Remind yourself you can do this. This is, there are things still possible for you. It is not the end of the road here at all. And that so many people get diagnosed and you were always the same person. But the news has changed you. And then how you walk forward is going to be different than where you were just moments prior to hearing your diagnosis. So to me, it is a tricky road. It's a tricky road. And having people on this show, I hope helps you all navigate that. That is really one of the main purposes why I'm here and why I want to do this show continually, to bring these people to the forefront in these great community profiles. So these episodes are there for you through Spotify and other channels that you find your podcasts. Also on YouTube at FSHD Society's site there, on their channel. This is the community profiles, as we call it. And then, of course, we do the hot off the press episodes as well, kind of giving you the latest and greatest of what's happening in the community. I can tell you, and I'm never quite sure what episode will air when, to give you highlights of what's coming on the calendar. But I do encourage you to look at it yourself. Visit FSHDSociety.org, and it's up on the top right there in the calendar of events. Gets you involved there. What I'm going to tell, you know, our guest today, Jane Nemke, is, you know, you want to find more out about your, group in your area and who you can help and who or what group you want to be a part of. It is, I believe, and I'm looking for it right now, it's at FSHDSociety.org, of course. And then if you're getting involved, that's what you want to do, is you go under that, get involved. And then it says connect, find your local chapter, and then go from there. There's power and community. That's the first words you're going to see. And then you can scan that map of the country and kind of decide, you know, where are we going to go from there? So if you're in the, you know, area of Tampa, Florida, there's Southwest Florida, there is Tampa chapter. And that's what I would tell her with Jane Pollock, and get involved there if you're in the Tampa area. And throughout, I mean, even up in Canada now too. So visit that, get involved, be part of that community. I think that's part of the pivot, part of the change, part of that self-talk when you're around a community of people. And I know some are going to be not quite as outgoing. I found that when I've joined these chapter meetings, you don't necessarily have to say a lot. Just being a part of it is impactful and helpful. So thanks again to our guest, Janet Nemke. You can find her designtothrive.com. You can definitely still visit that. She's doing some work still through there as she worked in the Madison area here in my state of Wisconsin. And now she's looking to make her mark down in the Tampa area in Florida. You can find ways to connect with her through there. Might be a great option if you're looking to make some friends, especially if you're in the Tampa area. there's one that moved there, and maybe she's looking for some outreach too. Thanks again for being here, and we look forward to another episode bringing you next time on the FSHD Society Radio Show. Take care. Bye-bye.